In this episode of Soundproofist, I have a conversation with Dr. Erica Walker, a researcher in environmental health. Erica went all over Boston to measure sound levels in the city, and she interviewed residents about their perceptions of noise. She goes beyond the decibel to looking at the psychological and physical impacts of noise on a community. Her work, with the help of some volunteers, launched the website Noise in the City, where you can listen to interviews and sound samples, look at maps that show noise levels, participate in a survey, and review data from her research. Erica also released a free app called Noise Score. You can use this app to measure in decibels the environmental noise levels, but you can also use it to track your perception of the noise. You'll learn in this conversation that perception makes all the difference in how it impacts human health, but it's much more difficult to measure. Noise Score is available at no charge for both iPhone and Android. We talked over Skype, and we talked about her research and her interest in going beyond Boston to help other communities. Her first step is to create better tools to help people measure the problems they face. So, let's take a listen. I have read a couple of interviews with you that were linked to your website, and I kind of know the story from reading that of, you know, how you got involved in dealing with noise. Just briefly, can you just describe, you know, what prompted you to do that?
Yes. So, you know, it was a personal experience. I was a working artist, and I worked in my apartment, and my apartment was my studio, it was my office space. And the people who lived above me had two small kids, and when they moved in, it just completely changed the soundscape of my apartment. So, you know, their floor was my ceiling, and so the kids would run back and forth all night long, or all day, all night, and it was just, and it just drove me insane. And then I complained to my landlord. They were very nice about it. They were like, document the times that it happened and anything that you can think of that would be important, and we can build a case against them. And so I did that, and in the process of trying to document evidence about how loud they were, I wanted to see if other people were suffering from the same thing and what they did to alleviate the problem. And so by doing that, I found out that there was this like entire community of people who lived in these shared spaces who were dealing with noise issues from their neighbors. And I was just like, okay, this is like way bigger than me. So I could either, you know, deal with my issue and that satisfies me, but what about the other people? So I didn't take one for the team. So I ended up moving out, and I just decided to kind of really get down into how widespread this problem is and how is it impacting our health.
And it is really hard when you can't control. I think that is, as you said, that you can't control what's happening. In fact, the only ones who are in control are the people making the noise, and there may not be anything you can do about that.
Exactly. And I think that noise issues are a proxy for control. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's, if you don't feel like you have control over your life, everything else is out of whack.
And I think that's what people are looking for, is like, you know, what can I do about this?
Exactly.
And in the past, you know, well, you know, what do people do? They maybe call the police. The police are busy with other issues. If you have a setup where you've called the police on someone who is like really making an outrageous amount of noise, there are times when that person or people, they may not want to change, you know, or they're incensed because you tried to do something about it and they do it again.
They retaliate.
I also think there are just issues with the way that American homes are built, you know, apartments. And I've talked before to people who said, you know, no one really thinks about the acoustics of a place when their developers are building a building.
Right.
It might be an
right.
afterthought, and then it's
right.
a little bit hard to deal with. So some of the things that I know affect a lot of people here is simply that, is that you have, you know, a half inch of drywall on one side of some 2x4s and a half inch of drywall on the other side. And of course you're going to hear stuff. I'm wondering, like, when you started getting into studying acoustics. Is that what you basically went into at that point?
Yes. So I studied community noise and its impacts on our health. So I did my PhD in public health. So I did environmental health and epidemiology, but my research focus was on community noise.
Well, I did see in one of the interviews that you were like diving into learning all about decibel levels and things. And you mentioned something about an A-weighted decibel. And I have to admit, I don't know what that is either. So what does that mean to a layperson?
Right. So it's kind of like how we regulate and describe noise throughout our environment. So let's say, for example, your neighbors are being loud and you call the police and the police come with their sound level meter. If they do that, they measure the noise. Like, they may not do that. They measure the noise and they report that, hey, it's not that loud, quote unquote. It's this decibel. So the decibel that they are using is the A-weighted decibel. And the A-weighted decibel is a weighting system that that makes the assumption that the noise that we hear is the noise that's relevant. So that they are saying that the noise that we hear is the noise that we process through our auditory system, right? We hear noise, but we also can feel noise. So if you look at a noise event, let's say you're measuring that loud party or that loud neighbor, you can break down that noise profile along an octave band. And the octave band has these bands that range from a little over 0 hertz to about 20,000 hertz. So the lower the hertz, the more the sound that can be characterized as a rumbling or a vibration. And then as you move up the hertz, it becomes more of a hissing, kind of a whistle, cricket type noise. So that octave band is describing the character of the noise. So when we report or regulate with A-weighted sound, we chop off the contributions from the low frequency and we chop off the contributions from the high frequency because we don't normally process those through the auditory system. Or the auditory system is less sensitive to the sound that's in those hertz, those frequency bands. So, I mean, if you are in an apartment and the neighbor is moving furniture above you, like if you're using the A-weighted decibel, it's cutting off the contributions from that rumbling aspect of the noise. And that's the rumbling aspect of the noise is what's bothering you, right? When the police come in and measure it, they're using a metric that chops off the issue. So it's like, I actually know it's the low frequency sound that's really bothering me.
If, for example, you were trying to make a recording to make a case to your landlord or something and say, here's what I hear in my apartment, it probably also wouldn't pick up those super low frequencies, right? It would maybe pick up if people were yelling, for example.
Right. It would just truncate it. Exactly. It would truncate the sounds that our auditory system is not sensitive to. But we process noise outside of the auditory system. So like if you're in that apartment where the neighbors are thumping above you and you put in earplugs, you may not be able to hear it so much, but you'll definitely feel it. So for me, I'm really interested in the types of noise that we feel because it's not regulated and it's not really studied as much, but it's very pervasive in our environment. And it's really, really, really hard to deal with because it can penetrate through walls, it can travel long distances. So it's just a really kind of quote unquote sinister side of noise exposure.
Yeah, I think so. And I also think, again, with the way that we have construction here, I think that the wood framed houses and apartment buildings, the wood is resonant and is actually a conductor, isn't it, for noise. So you have the framing of a building, of an apartment building, and someone in one apartment is doing something, you know, like banging on the floor, you're going to hear it on a different floor and maybe not even on an adjacent wall because it's traveling through the joists and it's traveling through the studs. And it's like a whole network. And probably by the time it reaches you in your apartment, it's picked up all those low frequencies.
And it's been amplified.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, I mean, you know, it was funny when I when I had a reasonably friendly relationship with my neighbors upstairs. You know, one time he was like, can you come upstairs? We're not really doing anything. And to a degree, he was right. So, I mean, the kids were running across the floor, but it's like a two-year-old kid. But you're like, well, why does this sound like a herd of elephants?
Right.
And it was like, it's because you said it's because of poor construction materials that amplify sound as opposed to absorb it. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
That is something that it's very hard to change. It was the same issue I have with restaurant noise, although a little different, because the restaurant noise is, you can do something with sound absorption in that room. Yeah. When you're in an apartment building, you can put up all the sound absorption you want, but it's not going to do anything for, you know, stopping that neighbor noise from coming in. Maybe it's a nice thing to do for your neighbors, you know, because maybe right. you'll dampen some of the sound you're making inside your place, but yeah, right. it's not really going to help. You did some yes. field research as part of a project, Noise in the City, which I think was mostly focused in Boston, right?
Yes, Greater Boston, yes.
And during that time, you went around the city, right, and measured noise and interviewed people. Is yes. that right?
Yes, exactly. So, like, for my dissertation, the dissertation part of my research was actually going in about the city and measuring noise levels in different locations. However, the more subjective perception piece was for noise in the city. So, like, when I was out measuring noise, people would come up to me, you know, I'm some crazy black woman with a microphone standing in their neighborhood at odd times of the day. And they're like, what are you doing? And I would tell them that I'm measuring sound. And they're like, are you from the city? I've been calling for, like, the past and this and that, you know. And I'm like, no, I'm a researcher. And then, you know, through that process, people started talking to me about not only the sound levels, but their perception and how it was impacting their health. And so, like, the perception piece, which is noise in the city, kind of dealt with the community noise perception outside of the actual noise levels.
Yeah, I think that's key, really. That's it, perception. And you can't put a measurement really on perception, not because it's subjective. And I think you probably also run the risk of being seen as overly sensitive, you know, and don't take them seriously. You do need some sort of a measurement to be objective, I think. But if those measuring tools don't capture the right data, they don't make your point, because any kind of noise mitigation comes with a price. And
exactly.
To be persuasive, it probably takes a number of factors. And I suspect that that is what your goal is to compile all this into data that is actionable.
Yes, and data that is representative of the entire noise experience. So if we're already starting with a metric that cuts off things that are very important and very pervasive in our environment, and we're not even considering the perception component, we are only telling a fraction of the story. And for me, I'm interested in the relationship between community noise and health. So I want to make sure that how we are describing community noise when we look at the relationships is correct.
I agree. I think another part of being psychologically affected by noise, which, as for example, you can't sleep very well if you have sirens going off or neighbors partying or something like that. Another component may be the stress it has on you of not being able to do anything about it. That component also must be an impact on your health when you're just like, maybe you can't get to sleep because you hear the kids stomping at 3 a.m. and you knew something would happen, but you didn't know when. And it makes
when,
you.
Exactly. You know, like, you know, I'll share this with you. I sent you an email. But from the survey report that we released a couple of years ago, there's a part where we ask people in the greater Boston area, what is it about noise that you just find so annoying? And if you look at the responses and the high rates of agreement, you know, they were saying things like, I feel like if I complain, nothing will be done. I can't control it. It's impacting my health. I'm like looking at this data and I'm like, this sounds like someone describing a sexual assault. But, you know, we're just talking about noise. So people feel completely held hostage by sound in their communities. And on top of that, they feel like they can't do anything about it and it's impacting their health. For me, that was just like aha moment. Like, oh, I get that. This is deep.
And we can all relate to it, really. I think if we didn't have ways of sharing this information with each other, you know, you could just feel like, oh, it's just me dealing with this issue, but everyone else I know doesn't have it. if you scratch the surface, I'm sure you find that almost everyone is having some kind of an experience. You know, even if they have a house that's freestanding, it could be the neighbor's subwoofer is coming through a shared wall somehow.
Exactly. I'm dealing with an issue with a guy who used to live in Boston, and he moved out into the suburbs because he was really just over it. He lived in an area that was directly under a flight path, and he was like, I can't take it anymore. So he moved to a small town, and you know, he has another issue. His neighbor's dogs, like, they bark 24 hours a day.
Oh my God.
And he was like, I didn't leave, you know, flight path sound to move out to the middle of nowhere and then be bothered by these neighbor's dogs. Like, this is ridiculous.
I approached it with, at first was like, what products can I buy and what processes can I do to make my apartment more like a fortress? Well, you can only do so much, especially if you're a renter. You know, in fact, you may not be able to do much at all. And then, you know, the second thing might be, well, what can I do to persuade my neighbors to, maybe that's your first step. What can I do to persuade or negotiate with my neighbors over this? And then the third thing might be like what you ended up doing, which is just like, I give up, or this other person you talked to, I'm going to move. But you don't know that the next place you move to is not going to have some of those same issues.
Exactly.
It seems like some of your field work, when you would go out and interview people, you could hear all these jackhammers and things in the background.
Yeah.
So that's a whole nother kind of noise also, is that it's not illegal to repair a street or build a building down the street or something like that. But those are some of even the most intrusive noises because they're so loud. They're automatically at the high end of the Richter scale, the high end of the decibel scale. Feels like Richter scale, right?
It does.
Are you involved at all in any kind of neighborhood, local issues for parameters around construction hours or conditions or anything like that to make it more bearable for people who live in the vicinity of these noisy projects?
No, not yet. Because I feel like we haven't developed or used the right metrics to even get people at the table. So if we're talking about a jackhammer, which has high components of low frequency and high frequency noise, the way that we traditionally measure it and regulate is still using the A-weighted decibel. So we need to go back and convince people that we need to use completely different metrics to describe this. And only then can we get to the table to talk about impact. Because if we're using the wrong metrics and I want to make some sort of community statement using the wrong metrics, to me, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
We need to go back to the drawing board and start from the beginning.
So you and your team, I think, created an app called Noise Score.
Yes.
How does Noise Score fit into, how does one use it and how are you applying it right now?
So, Noise Score was released late last year. And what we're doing is, so Noise Score is sort of like the perception piece to all of the research. Oh, with Noise Score, you download it. It's available on iTunes and Android phones. So you download it, you create a noise event. So let's say you're in a restaurant and it's really loud. So what you do is you can record the sound level in decibels. And then after you record that, we then want to know some questions about how the sound is making you feel. We want to know where you are. We want to know if you're indoors. We want to know if you're outdoors. We want to know how active it is. We want to know what are some of the dominant noise sources in the background. And we want to know if this is stressing you out or is it relaxing you. Do you feel like this is sound or do you feel like this is noise? And so we're taking that data and then we're trying to, like, eventually I would like to use this data to be able to kind of understand what are some of the determinants of perception, of noise perception?
Yeah, I'm sitting right now looking at the app, and I know when I opened it, I thought, well, this is a really great idea. There were a couple of things I wasn't sure, how do I use this, or is this something that I need to interact with? So, for example, you can load the app and then look at a map, and there's kind of like hot spots on the map already. It looks like these are places where people have already reported in. For example, like I see like Chicago, Toronto, looks like Georgia, maybe Atlanta. How does one, like, a layperson who wants to contribute to this, do they use some of these? There's some menus here that say like noise perception, layers, mm-hmm. filters. So these are things that they can actually adjust and then send a report to you?
Or send a report, talk to, like, you know, organize around it and, you know, show this data to, I work in a very lab.
That's perfect.
Like, so my office is in a medical campus.
I have noticed I've heard a lot of very siren-y type things since we've been talking.
Yeah. So right next door to me is an emergency room.
Oh, my God. Perfect. Speaking of, like, having your stress level go up, I mean, do you, like, eventually, yeah. like, think, oh, okay, well, I've heard, you know, 35 sirens today, and I'm chilling now. It doesn't even bother me. Or does it get you every time?
It gets me every time. Yeah. I have not gotten used to this. But anyway, so, like, I think that, you know, eventually we're going to open source all of this data. So, you know, like, we're in the piloting phase of the app, but we want it to be used as a tool for advocacy. So you can organize around your community, around a certain issue. You can say, you know what, we're really bothered by aircraft noise. We're really bothered by this restaurant that's just, like, super loud. And then you can use this as data to present to at a public hearing or to your city council person. Because eventually, you know, when we iron out all the kinks, you know, we're going to release the data. The community can analyze the data in a way that works for them. And they can use this as a advocacy tool around any sort of noise issue they have in their community.
There's a couple of apps that are around, and maybe using all of them for different purposes is kind yes. of ideal. So, for example, this yes. one, it's not limited to being indoors or outdoors. It's any number of different options. Plus, you have the perception factor in. Then there's like Soundprint, for example, which seems like mostly it's yes. like reporting on restaurant noise. And then there's a Hush yes. City app, which I'm yet to explore. Yes. Which yes. is quiet places.
Exactly. And all of this is data that can help you advocate for your cause. Like, you know how, how you were saying in your apartment, you know, you were trying to look for products to help you in the situation. I think that we should utilize all of the tools out there that are available to us to stake our claim.
I think so, too. And I think a lot of people still don't really know a lot about acoustics. I mean, in a way, it's a very rarefied field, right? In fact, I actually think it's a great field to get into.
I agree.
Because the lack of awareness of acoustical impact is kind of reached a crescendo, I think. And
I agree.
You know, for example, I live in San Francisco, and there's a lot of development going on. And no one really thinks about, like, the acoustics of, there's a lot of hills in this city. And when you have hills and you build really tall buildings so they can have fabulous views, you're also creating an amphitheater for all the neighbors around you. And you have all this wealth coming into the city, building all these tall homes with floor-to-ceiling glass for the views on multiple floors. Mm-hmm. And what this is creating is this unbelievable acoustic environment that's not good. You know, if somebody four blocks away is having a party on their balcony at 2 o'clock in the morning and everybody's enjoying the view and really drunk and looking out and talking,
yes.
you can hear them
exactly.
really far away.
Exactly.
When city planners, they're considering a number of things, like how much of the land is the property going to sit on and how much open space is there and that sort of thing. But they're not looking at the impact of what's going to happen to the noise in the neighborhood if you build these things a certain way. And it really does make a difference. The second thing is in the construction industry itself, I think your average construction crew, they're not trained in acoustics. So they come in, they've got specs. Maybe there's now a requirement in that area for putting insulation in the walls. But maybe they're not considering, whoever's planned that project, what's the best kind of insulation to use that's going to really absorb sound. And the default is, like, if you're lucky, you might get fiberglass. Fiberglass isn't right. really the most effective noise reducer, as it turns out.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, how do you get people educated at the point when you actually could do something about it, whether they're remodeling or they're building a new apartment building or something, so that it's built so that it doesn't create even more issues. And the third thing is, as a consumer or a apartment dweller or whatever, once you've moved into one of these things and you find out, and again, you don't know when you go look at an apartment and you're going to move in, maybe the neighbor with a toddler isn't home right then and you don't get to hear that. You sign the lease and there you are. And so, yeah, what can you do once you're in and you don't own this, or even if you do, how do you deal with this issue?
And for me, I'm taking it, I believe in going back to the beginning. And for me, I'm focusing on using the right metrics to, because if we're not using the right metrics, we can't properly answer any of these questions. So I want to take it back from the beginning, and I want us to kind of think about, well, what are the important attributes of sound and what are the important attributes of noise? Only then can we begin to have this conversation about, you know, regulatory policies and so forth.
So your site began, I think, and your project began with Boston, but it, you know, the app and the site itself is kind of primed to go nationwide. Are there any communities in particular that you want to focus on as you expand your project?
Yes. It's so funny. You like, you know, this interview is relaxing because I'm like finding some, I'm talking to someone who gets it, but it's also really stressful because I have like this list of things that I need to do. So the answer to your question is yes, there are many communities who have reached out to me and who want to get to work on these issues. So yes. It's like one of the many lists of things on the list that I need to do. But you know, these things cost money. You know,
yes.
This project I did by, you know, working three jobs, and people who believed in it worked for free. But the reality is these things cost money, you know, so I'm at the point now where I'm trying to find money to be able to expand this project in a way that is useful and beneficial. Yes. There's a line out the door.
We probably don't even know the half of it. We're just a couple of city dwellers, but imagine, you know, there might be issues in smaller communities or in cities that don't get as much attention.
Right.
And I think it's an economic issue also.
Yes. You know, it's really funny. You know, there's some, you know, I've talked to some communities that have a high immigrant population, and you know, they live in, like, it's really crazy. Like, I've been to these communities and I've seen these houses that are literally, the balcony is overlooking a major highway. The people who live there are probably undocumented, most likely undocumented, and the last thing that they want to do is bring attention to some sort of legal authority about a noise issue. So they just kind of like suffer through it in silence because they have a whole bunch of other issues to be worried about, where if they notify some sort of authority, it can mean a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a whole bunch of people who are just very disempowered by this because they have a whole other set of issues.
That's an important thing as well, as and that's getting into the economics of the issue.
Exactly.
Also, we have basically a housing crisis going on in the country. And once you've moved into a place in some areas, you don't want to let go of it no matter how bad it is, because I don't know about Boston, but I know there are many areas where you have rent control that goes away if you move to another place and then you pay the market rate someplace else, which is now exceeding many people's salaries.
I work three jobs and one of my jobs is just to pay rent. It's like, okay, I pay rent, now I have to like work two other jobs to like pay bills and eat. So it's like, it's crazy. It's really crazy.
It is. And it's something that's been happening for a long time, but I think that it's accelerated in the last few years. And so you combine the sound of development outside, which is a lot of our noise, and the fact that not only do they not necessarily plan and think about the impact of acoustics of taller buildings, but also what doesn't get coordinated sometimes is like how many of these projects are going on within a very small range of, you know, in the same zone at the same time, because you can actually exceed the sound barrier. You know, if you have enough projects going on and enough jackhammers all running at the same time, and we've had that happen, you know, where you have no egress to the neighborhood because it's all blocked by cement mixers that are all rolling, and that has its own sound.
Right.
Who's coordinating all this, and what can you do about it? Again, you might think, oh, this is a great neighborhood. It's very residential compared to where I used to live. It's kind of quiet and stuff. And the next thing you know, three projects start up. And I think there needs to be an awareness and an education with there, even for city planners, you know, things that they need to consider important. And it may not matter to someone until they have it happen to them.
You hit it, because it didn't matter to me until I experienced it. You know, just be real, right? Like I didn't even think about sound until I got into a situation and it impacted me directly, right? It's true. But
yeah.
I think we're on the upswing of things. You know, kind of like the person who thought that, hey, maybe the world should recycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we recycle without even thinking about it. So it's like, I think we're going to have the same struggle, but I think we're going to also have the same outcome.
You know, same thing with, like, I think you mentioned this one too in one of your interviews, secondhand smoke. You don't, like, now sit in a restaurant or at your office. I mean, in my parents' generation, you might have had somebody smoking at the desk next to you. Can't even imagine that. So, yeah, I think you're right. And I really applaud your efforts and really want, you know, to see you succeed in moving the needle on this. Ultimately, in the next couple of years, like, what's your number one goal? It sounds like it is educating people, making them aware with these different measurements. Do you have, like, one thing in particular you want to tackle beyond that?
You know, I would really like to understand more about how perception impacts our health, right? Because we have many epidemiological studies that show how loudness impacts our health. I would really like to be able to show that our perception of sound can also impact our health. And then I would just like to help communities rally around some sort of issue and give them the tools and the support and anything they need to actually solve problems. So one thing that we as researchers do, we publicize problems, but we don't solve them. We're like, look, air pollution is bad for your health, and then we'll go back to our office and look, noise is bad for your health. But we want to deliver tools that people can use to advocate for change.
Is there anything else that you want to add to this? You want to share with listeners about what they can do or what's next?
You know, for those who are suffering, you know, make your voices known. I think that's going to be the most important thing. Just don't feel like it's a sacrifice that you have to make because you've chosen to live, you know, next to or live in these urban environments or live next to. Or, you know, like, it's not a sacrifice that you have to make in exchange for convenience. Like, make your voices heard, because more voices we have, the more awareness we can bring to the issue. And please reach out to me. Like, I'm a very accessible person, and if you feel like no one's listening, I'm definitely listening.
That's great. And they can reach you through the noiseinthecity.org site?
Yes.
Okay. Terrific.
Or they can email me. Feel free to provide my email. Like, I'm a real person, and I love to hear people's stories, and I love to help them advocate for change.
Great. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. And I'd love to help you also. And helping this effort in any way I can. Anyway, thank you. Thank you for everything you've done. And I'm sure the people in Boston will benefit greatly from the work you've done already.
I'd like to thank Erica for her work and for her generosity and her efforts to help us quantify some of the noise issues we face. As she said in this podcast, she'd like to hear your stories. You can contact her through her website, noiseinthecity.org. There's a form on the Contact Us page. Or you can email her directly at edw266@mail.harvard.edu. Thanks, Erica, and thanks to all of you for listening.